Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
At Alma, we know the connection between you and your therapist matters. But if you're already feeling stressed and burnt out, the idea of trying to find a therapist you really connect with can be overwhelming. That's why Alma's focused on helping you find the right therapist for you. When you browse their online directory, you can filter by the qualities that are most important to you. Then, book free 15-minute consultations with any therapist you're interested in seeing. And because 95% of therapists at Alma accept insurance, you can find care that's affordable. Too. You want to talk to someone, but not just anyone. Alma is there to help you find the right fit. Visit helloalma.com/therapy30 to schedule a free consultation today. That's helloalma.com/therapy30.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He's a world champion wrestler,
best-selling author,
actor,
and lead singer of Fozzy.
Now
he's rocking the podcast world.
This
is Talk Is Jericho.
Talk Is Jericho.
Starring Chris Jericho.
Welcome to Talk Is Jericho, the pot of thunder and rock and roll. The spell of boredom you're under will slowly be broken by Chris Jericho. I love it. The People's Podcast has arrived. Let's go for a ride. It's gonna get gone, link on, it'll get gone, bonnet gone, link on, it'll be gone, it'll be gone, but it'll be boom, tick on, tick on, tick on, it's a link on, let's get gone, on, a bit on. Oh, my time has come. Oh, the time has come. Link on, link on, link on, get a link to people, don't you feel the rebump? People, don't you understand? Baby, don't you feel the creeper? Come on, baby, take my hand. La, 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 la. It's gonna get gone, gonna get gone, gonna get gone. La, 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 la. It's gonna get gone, gonna get gone, gonna get gone, gonna get gone, gonna get gone. And it's Friday!
It's Friday, Friday. Gotta get down on Friday.
Woo! What a great show today. Rob Zombie coming up. New live DVD release, The Zombie Horror Picture Show. New book out as well, a companion piece. You know we're going to talk all things zombie musically and, of course, movie-wise. He's a director, made some great horror movies. He loves horror movies. He just announced his latest movie, too, under the title 31, which I think might be the release date. I think it's going to be Halloween 3. That's my opinion. Hasn't revealed too much more about it, except for his guitar player, John 5, will be scoring the film. Okay? Do you understand what I'm saying to you right now? Also, I'll be taking your phone calls a little later in the show. You can ask me whatever you want. No limits, no restrictions, no restriction. Keep your eye on the Twitter. Phone number we posted at Talk Is Jericho. Don't you dare miss it. Also, the return of fish expert Ash Irvin. He's standing by right here live in the studio. But before we get to him, I just wanted to give another big thank you and yeah, boy, to you guys for checking out my sponsors. Supporting them means I get to do this show for free twice a week for you. I want to keep it that way, and I know you want it to. The easiest way to do that is to go to podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com. Click on the Keep Our Podcasts Free banner at the top of the page. That will take you to Talk Is Jericho and links to all of my sexy beast sponsors, including Amazon in the US, UK, and in Canada. So please go to podcastone.com. Click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page. Click, click, banner at the top of the page. Click, click, then click on Talk Is Jericho. Find all my great sponsors. Spend as much money as you want and keep my show free for you. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, well. The last couple weeks, I've been asking you to send in your questions at Talk Is Jericho on the Twitter for fish expert Ash Irvin. He's standing here live in the studio. you took the podcast world by storm last time, kind of a surprise hit. People have been requesting to have you back. A lot of people have said that you were one of their favorite guests ever here on Talk is Jericho. How has it changed your life? Have you been able to leave the house without being besieged by paparazzi and autograph seekers?
Fortunately, yes. I have been able to leave the house without anybody bothering me too bad.
Did you tell your friends you were on the show?
A few of them.
Did anybody listen?
No.
Well, you had a lot of people that listened that are Talk is Jericho fans. So I had them send some questions in to ask you, the fish expert, under the hashtag AskAsh. They sent it to the Twitter at Talk is Jericho. So you got a lot of people that want to pick your scientific brain, being the expert that you have, all the travels that you've done. It's funny because what were you just doing before you came in here?
I was watching River Monsters. It's a show where the host's name is Jeremy Wade, and he just fishes. He fishes and catches, or he's
He catches strange kinds of fish,
yeah,
and
that have been accused of murder of people.
And you actually even once said that Jeremy Wade is your hero.
Yes, I have.
Even more so than your dear old dad. No comment. Okay, so the reason why I asked you is that we had at PokerJack says, ask Ash if he is a River Monster fan.
Well, yes, I am. At
PokerJack.
PokerJack.
But get into it a bit. You actually have seen every single episode of River Monsters.
Pretty much every single episode except for the new ones.
What's your favorite episode? What's your favorite episode that's ever the craziest thing he's ever caught?
He's probably caught the Tom Assassin. It's a Wells catfish that was caught out of cooling pond from Chernobyl.
Wow.
Yeah.
Was it like mutated or something?
Not that he could tell. Like, it didn't show any physical features that were mutated, but you know, genetics and stuff like that.
Wow.
For the testings.
Because you've shown me quite a few episodes of River Monsters.
Yes.
Jeremy Wade is quite the... Maybe you could be the next Jeremy Wade at some point.
Hopefully.
Be a good gig, right?
Yeah.
Okay. At DAB Savage wanted to know, what's the most villainous creature in the sea? And what's the nicest creature in the sea?
Well, the villainous, most villainous creature, it would depend on if you're referring to looks, behavior, or like... Looks or behavior, those depend. And for the nicest...
Well, so we'll go back to the hill. So for looks, what's the most evil fish look?
I probably think it would be either It would probably be a deep sea fish, depending on the goblin shark, or an anglerfish. Because the anglerfish has big jaws. It could also be put in like behavior, because it attacks, and it's got those big, mean-looking jaws. And then there's the goblin shark, which is a pink shark. Yeah, I know it's pink, but...
So even though it's pink, it might seem girly, but it's not.
It's not. It's got, its jaws aren't connected to its, you know, like, its head. So when it bites, the jaws shoot forward, grab the prey, and then bring it back. And then it's got this, sort of like a snout is pretty ugly, too. And then it's got... Right above its snout, it's like a unicorn horn or something.
Wow. So it's pretty evil looking.
Yes.
How about the nicest sea creature?
The nicest? Well, I mean, the friendliest one would probably be a seahorse, because seahorses come up and, you know, check you out. So will sharks. Sharks, it all depends. Some sharks will check you out and then leave you alone.
Which sharks are those?
They're sometimes great white sharks will just check you out when you're in a cage. Most sharks in the world will check you out without hurting you.
Hmm. Are there some that will hurt you?
Yeah, like this is based off basic knowledge of mine. I'm presuming it's either a bull shark, a mako shark, or possibly even a sand tiger shark.
Oh, so those are the worst ones?
Yes.
Okay. At Steppy Tay wants to know, what's your favorite shark?
My favorite shark is a crocodile shark. By the way, I love that name, Steppy Tay.
And why do you like crocodile sharks?
Crocodile sharks are just, you know, they're they're not too big.
Mm-hmm.
They're 3 feet long.
Mm-hmm.
But little tiny jaws and big, huge eyes, they live deeper down. They live in the midnight zone. No, twilight zone. And they're named because when fishermen neck them up and get them on the deck of their boat, they snap their jaws hard and...
They make that sound?
Crocodile. No.
Oh. Okay, so like a crocodile. What's your favorite type of whale?
Probably baleen whale.
Why is a baleen whale?
Baleen whales are just pretty... They're just funny to look at, pretty much.
Are they big whales?
Yeah, they're big whales.
I've never heard of a baleen whale before.
They've got really big heads, and they're just really funny to look at, because they look like... Their bodies are smaller than their heads, and they're just like big heads with small bodies, and it's just funny to look at.
Okay, so the baleen whale. Okay, so we all have another question here from @JohnRiot, all the way from Australia. People are sending in questions from Australia.
I like that.
He wants to know, what is the smallest and deadliest octopus that you know?
A blue-ringed octopus.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Where are they found?
They're found in the Great Barrier Reef.
In Australia?
Yeah, in Australia.
Wow.
So watch out, John.
What are they? They have bad poisons?
They're very poisonous and they're small. They're pretty poisonous and small.
Okay.
And live mainly in reefs.
Does the octopus bite you or does it sting you?
It will bite you, and it's got, I believe it's neurotoxin.
Oh.
It will bite you and then the neurotoxin will just... eventually kill you.
Wow. Soon. Okay. @NeilMalone wanted to know, he really thought you had a good opinion of the Loch Ness Monster and what it might be.
Thank you.
Do you think there could be similar creatures elsewhere in the world?
Well, yes, there could. I mean, there's like the sturgeon is basically a living dinosaur. So is the alligator gar.
What's an alligator gar?
An alligator gar, for all fishermen who know what a gar is, they're basically big, big, big fish. They get about maybe 16 feet I think that's the biggest.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have really long teeth, and they've got big snouts, really tough scales. You'll cut yourself on that. And they're very aggressive.
Oh, okay. All right.
Even small ones.
People learning a lot of things from Ash Irvin, the fish expert. @USS1Hunk wants to know, do you think a megalodon shark could still exist today?
Well, I mean, I don't know.
Now, what exactly is it? Before you get into that answer, sorry to interrupt, what exactly is a megalodon shark?
Megalodon shark is a prehistoric great white shark that feasted on whales and lived... like 200 million years ago, and grew to 60 feet long, and like I said, ate whales, and it died out quite a long time ago, like
millions of years ago.
Yeah,
or?
Millions of years.
How did they know that it even existed?
They have found teeth that are about as big as maybe my hand, which
got a big hand there. Yeah, about 8 to 9 inches long, maybe.
Yeah.
So the teeth were that big.
Because that's the only thing they found. That's the only thing they can find of prehistoric sharks, because they don't have bones. All sharks have cartilage, not bones. The only bones in their bodies are their teeth.
Really?
Yes.
Wow, you're on fire today, Ash Irvin. And somebody else here wants to know, @MJ, March 47. Recently, fishermen made news when one caught a goblin shark and another caught a megamouth. These sharks, what do you think about this? Because these sharks are very rare. Why are they so rare?
Well, for one, the goblin sharks, like I discussed before,
mm-hmm.
live deep down in the midnight zone.
What's the midnight zone?
Midnight zone is the deepest part of the ocean.
Okay.
There's the sunlight zone, twilight zone, and midnight zone. Midnight zone is the deepest zone there is.
Okay.
And they're just very rare to hook up and get out of the water because, you know, they're so far down and they're really rare. You don't often see them except when they wash up on beaches or when someone catches them.
Okay.
And a megamouth Megamouth are very rare. They're like whale sharks and basking sharks, but they're way more. They're way rarer.
Okay.
And they just have, like their name suggests, huge mouths, huge heads, huge bodies. They're just huge.
Okay, gotcha.
And
so
rare.
Hence the name Megamouth. All right, we're running out of time. We got time for two more questions. You got so many more. I mean, it's ridiculous how many people responded to this, how famous you are right now. At Jonathan Biggs wanted to know, what's the largest fish known to man?
Well, the largest fish known to man is the whale shark. The largest creature known to man is the blue whale.
Okay, gotcha. So there's a lot of big, big fish out there. Wrapping it up, at Benny Coles wants to know, if Ash could be a fish or a sea creature, what kind of a fish or sea creature would he be?
Well, I'm not going to say a crocodile shark because, you know, they're rare and, you know, they're
kind of ugly.
Yeah, kind of ugly. But I would definitely want to be a decent sized grouper of maybe a gag grouper or a goliath grouper.
Why is that?
Well, I like groupers. They're cool. And last year for my birthday, me and my dad caught a huge gag grouper.
How big was it? 4 feet?
3 feet.
Three feet,
like 6 inches.
4 feet if dad's telling the story, 3 feet, 6 inches if Ash is telling the truth. That was fun, though.
Yeah, that was really fun.
Okay, so grouper's your favorite fish. Always a completely amazing experience to have Ash Irvin, the fish expert, here learning so much about sea creatures and all things aquatic. We'll have to have you back on the show again soon. Until then, any final words for all of your fans that sent in these questions?
Thank you for all the questions. I hope you guys, you know, liked it. And see you next time, but you never know. I'm out. Peace.
Thanks to Ash Irvin for all of his insight and amazing, amazing knowledge and mind. We'll have him back on again soon with more of your questions. And today, later on, Rob Zombie coming up.
Talk is Jericho.
All right, I'm here in Rob Zombie's dressing room. The funny thing is I came in here and we started recording. I didn't have you plugged in. And thank God I realized beforehand I didn't have you plugged in then afterwards,
yeah.
Right?
Well, all you missed was us talking about how bad this couch is.
I know, right?
Sitting on.
It's funny because we're here backstage at Carolina Rebellion and it's a huge, huge festival. But it's always kind of the same. You go into the dressing room, yeah. And we could be at Carolina Rebellion, or we could be at, you know, Shecky's Bar and Grill in Peoria, Illinois.
I know, the wood paneling that never dies, the double-wide mobile home.
It's total 1975, right?
Never quits.
But, I mean, you're one of the busiest guys. You know, you're always – actually, kind of a lot like me. You do a lot of different things, but it all comes from the heart. You do things that interest you, which is always really cool. You're kind of touring behind the new record. And I always forget the name of the title. It's not easy.
Everyone says it wrong.
Venomous Rat Regeneration Vendor.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure. Here's the cliche question. How'd you come up with that?
Yeah, I don't even know how I came up with that. I remember we recorded the record at my house.
Uh-huh.
And I was taking a lunch break, eating a sandwich. And I think I just came up with it. Most of the stuff would happen like that. You need to hammer away in this studio.
Yeah.
Makeshift studio. And then just take a break and go, I think I have it.
Well, it's not the first time you've always had kind of interesting song titles and interesting, you know, album titles. You always do things kind of outside of the norm.
Yeah, I mean, you know, whoever said everything has to make sense, you know.
But that's also kind of how you kind of established your individuality and established your band right from the start with White Zombie. It was always a little bit different, especially when you came out late 80s, early 90s. I mean, the scene was completely different, but you always stood out.
Yeah.
Was it hard at first to, I mean, anytime you do something different, people are always kind of looking at you like, oh, this will never work.
Oh, well, I mean, we never really did it. I mean, in the early days, the scene we started in was sort of that Lower East Side, almost like art rock scene. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like metal.
Where are you from?
Well, I was living in New York.
Okay.
I mean, I was from Massachusetts, but by that point, I had been living in New York. Just to go to school and stuff. And it really was like, you know, the scene was, it seemed like the thing in that scene was to be as different from everybody else as possible. Like, nobody wanted to be the same as anyone else. So that made sense to me. So you're always like trying to outdo the other bands by who can be weirder or more different. And then towards the end of the 80s, we sort of started playing metal clubs, like places like Lemoore's in Brooklyn. And then we started playing with metal bands, and it was really weird because we didn't fit at all. And then when we started touring with those bands, first, I remember the first real tour we did was opening for Testament, and the crowd hated us. And then we toured with Danzig and Megadeth and Anthrax, and it just never made any sense. Eventually it made sense, but at that point,
at the time, it didn't, though.
No, we'd go open for the Cro-Mags and Lemoore's, and you got like 1500 skinheads looking at us like, what the is this?
Right,
I guess they're here and they're hanging out with the Cro-Mags, so we have to respect them on some level, but we don't like it.
Yeah, if they're on the bill with the Cro-Mags, Cro-Mags must like them. Yeah, but we don't have to.
Somehow they got in the door, so we'll deal with it. But
well, I mean, I remember the first time I started hearing about White Zombie, I used to think that Thunder Kiss 65 was a Pantera song because both you guys came out at the same time, and I didn't know the difference. You know, I was a real Maiden, Priest metal kid, and I was also a huge Trouble fan. And I went to see you guys at the Warfield, and it was Pantera, White Zombie, and Trouble.
Like, wait, these are three different bands?
Yeah, and I was like, I love Trouble so much.
Trouble were great.
Great band, you know, kind of underrated, kind of started a whole scene in a way. Yeah. And then when you guys came out, I'll never forget, you came on stage, and I kept waiting for you to sing. Like, the band was rocking, you were on stage, but there was some kind of a mess up with the mic. There was no sound.
Yeah, no, that's funny that you remember that.
Do you remember that?
Oh, I remember that.
Really?
Because that was the last time I would ever go on stage without checking the mic. I mean, we would do sound check or whatever, but now I will always check the mic before I walk out. And even if someone I trust goes, nope, it's all good, I go, it's not that I don't believe you, but I don't believe you.
Yeah.
So
you got to know for yourself.
Yeah.
Well, because I remember too, it was like you just never stopped rocking. That was the best thing. You just kept going. Yeah. Like, if there's no vocal, I'm still going to dance and put on a show.
Yeah. I still remember that. That probably because it's the only time we
Isn't that crazy there. Though? Yeah.
Yeah.
That was back in probably about 92, probably I think it was.
Yeah,
and actually, I was wrestling a lot in Japan at the time, and I used to use Thunder Kiss 65.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then...
Did you start in Japan?
I started in Japan, yeah. Well, I started kind of, you know, in small time Canada right. And then moved to Mexico, but Japan was kind of where I started making my money.
Right.
And I used Thunder Kiss until ECW started using it. Then I switched over to Electric Head Part 2.
Oh, I didn't know ECW used it.
Yeah, they did. That was their theme song. Of course, I'm sure you made millions off the rights, right?
Yeah. Now that I know about it.
But I loved Electric Head when he had that BMF. It was like, I just set up yours, baby.
Yeah.
Like, that was always part of your scene. Obviously, you're a kid from the
70s. Yeah, yeah.
You always were using like these really cool samples and stuff.
Yeah, I forget sometimes where they came from, but I would, you know, and I never really would search them out. I would just be watching something. I think that was from Shaft.
Yeah,
I think that was from Shaft, I think. If I remember, or Superfly or something. I think it was Shaft. Yeah, I just sit up yours, baby. and I just go, that's hilarious. I got to use that. I don't know why. And I
it just was perfect, though. It just kicked off this really cool vibe, you know. And were things different then? Like, could you use samples and not have to worry about... Because things have changed, right? Like, in the last 10, 15
years.
I
mean, back then, I don't think anybody was looking for... I mean, you know, the rap thing changed everything because people were just pulling everything and then no one was paying anything and then everybody started paying for everything. I said, listen to some of these rap albums. Like, how do they make a penny? The money they must pay out in rights. But, it was after that. People got more uptight about stuff. But I still kind of kept doing it.
I remember, I think it was Paul's Boutique is like the most sampled record of all time. It was before the the laws came into play, you know, where you had to really worry about that.
Yeah.
What were you like? Who were you listening to when you were a kid?
Well, I mean, it was a typical 70s kid. I mean, it was all whatever was on the radio. I mean, I was thinking my top things as a kid, and I have this picture, and it was Alice Cooper and Elton John. And finally, at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I got a good picture of me, Alice, and Elton John together. And I was like, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
It was really Kiss, Alice Cooper, and Elton John were the three things that I was obsessed with as a kid.
Which is an interesting mix because your show is a kind of a collection of all those. You know,
but everything was like that. It didn't matter if it was Barry Manilow or Diana Ross. Everybody had a huge, crazy show.
Yeah,
it was all about the show. I mean, probably Alice started that insanity, but even if you watched, like, you know, Sid and Marty Krofft, Brady Bunch, Friday Hour, it was a big show involved, you know. So I just always thought, oh, you need a big show. Although now we don't have a big show because I'm sick of it. But
you've scaled back on the show?
Yeah, no, it's funny because
you became kind of the guy that was doing all the stuff.
Well, on Mayhem, we took out so much production last summer that it was retarded. And so we went out with Korn a while back on this Night of Living Dread thing. I'm like, let's not take anything.
Wow.
And we took nothing. And after doing the whole tour, not one person mentioned the production.
Really?
Not being there. I was like, are you serious? I've wasted that millions and millions of dollars over the years, and no one even noticed it wasn't there.
Well, it's interesting, though, because, I mean, you are, you know, not just to say this to butter your popcorn, but you're a great front man. I mean, you have a lot of energy, a lot of vibe, and I can see why people, you know, the effects are great, but when you are the center of attention and John is a great performer and your band is great performers, it almost kind of goes away.
I think they, I think sometimes they zone out on the visuals.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, it works either way. I mean, and for myself, a lot of times when I've, like, going back to, say, Alice Cooper, I saw Alice maybe a year ago or so. He played a little secret show at the Whiskey with nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Literally the best show I've ever seen him do. I mean, I've probably seen him 100 times. That was my favorite show of all the shows with nothing.
Because
it's so weird.
I remember Paul Stanley said once, he goes, you can't put makeup on a record.
Yeah.
You know, it's all about the tunes.
And I've seen Kiss with nothing. One time they played the Foundations for him.
Oh,
remember that thing?
Yeah.
They played with nothing. It was great.
Yeah. I mean, I just saw Springsteen the other night, like 2 nights ago. And dude, I probably knew 3 songs, but one of the best shows I've ever seen, just because of the energy and the vibe, and you know, no pyro, no.
Sometimes the production makes you feel like you're not in a rock band anymore. Mm-hmm. It makes you feel like you're sort of like Siegfried and Roy, out there trying to hit stage cues and move before giant props. Probably the audience loves it, or maybe I hope they do. They did, but as a band, I think it eats away at the band, and every once in a while you got to scale it back before you become sort of a joke.
You become like a novelty of yourself. Because how far can you take it, right?
And it starts being ridiculous. Like, what are we all going to come riding out on camels next? Like, what do you do after a while? You just run out of things to do.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is, you have a DVD coming out,
which is the ridiculous,
the zombie horror picture show. That's the one, right? Is that kind of like closing the chapter on the big shows?
For now it is, yeah. I was like, the show can't get any bigger because, you know, we're playing all the big outdoor venues and like the show would barely fit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I go, we better film it now because it's ridiculous. The show's absolutely absurd. And I mean, it came out great. I mean, it plays like a movie. It's really cool. I wanted it to seem that way. So it's all there forever. And, you know, maybe we'll bring it back one day different, or maybe we won't. I don't know.
But this is like a concert film. I'm sure you directed it and edited it.
Yeah. I mean, I really wanted it to be. I mean, everybody, there's a million concert films. But for some reason, they all seem to be the same 9 or 12 cameras in the same position. One's on the jib over the crowd, a couple on, you know, on whatever fucking dolly tracks here and there.
Yeah, yeah.
And they all look the same. It doesn't matter if it's Willie Nelson or it's Slayer. They tend to shoot them the same. Yeah. They shoot them all the same and they want them all slick. And I was like, I don't want to do that. So we had, I don't know how many cameras we have. We had them everywhere. But the main thing, I had them all in the crowd. Mm. So the camera guys are always fighting through the people to shoot the stage.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes it feel like you're there, as opposed to, they always stand in front of the crowd when they shoot.
Mm.
And it's so clean and it's so perfect. And we didn't mix it. Like, the sound is the sound. Because, you know, that's the other thing. You watch live videos, you know, this is not a live moment.
We recorded it all in the studio, yeah.
And it's pretty obvious it's live because, you know, if we made mistakes, we said, we just left it in. We didn't fix it.
But that's real rock and roll, man.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the cool thing about it. And you know, your fans will forgive that because in the moment, it's like, oh, my gosh.
Well, that's the thing. People forget. You don't want to – I mean, maybe they don't forget, but, I mean, so many people use backing tracks, vocal backing tracks. I'm shocked at sometimes. So people don't understand, like, you know, your vocals can't come out perfect when it's 150 degrees and you're dying up there. And
you're putting on a show.
It doesn't sound like the record.
Yeah.
I don't know. Because it feels like someone just kicked me in the stomach while I'm trying to do this song.
Well, yeah, you were in, you played Jacksonville last week.
Yeah.
We were there too. And how hot was it there?
It was pretty brutal, but that was a good crowd.
Oh,
though.
Great crowd.
They were great.
Sure. But it's funny though, like sometimes I'll use the mic stand as a prop to hold me up.
Yeah.
If you hit a note and you just get that lightheadedness, you know?
And you feel yourself. It hasn't happened in a while, but it happened a couple times on Ozfest where it would just be so hot. You'd have that 1 second of loopiness and blacking.
Yeah.
You feel yourself falling off the stage. You're like, whoa, when you catch yourself. What actually happened?
You mentioned that you know, you directed and edited this. When did you start getting the freedom to be able to do that? I mean, when you first start out as a band, you're not going to say, I'm doing the videos. And they're going to go, okay, Rob.
Like, well, I did, and they didn't want me to. I mean, when the first White Zombie video was sort of like a weird thing where I had to hire somebody else, but I really just did it myself.
Mm-hmm.
And did it all myself, but they wouldn't trust me. And then by the second video... But after a point, well, it would be weird because I go, I know what I want. I want to do this. But they're like, well, but this guy did the Paul Abdul video. I go, that's right. Why I really don't want to do it. And I just felt like if it was always done by me, not because I'm so great, but if it was always done by me and real, it would always last.
It's your vision.
Right, but you see so many bands' videos, and even the band's embarrassed where they go, eh, we didn't really want to dress up like cavemen, but the director said it would be cool, so we did it. And,
it could kill you. Remember Billy Squier, Rock You Tonight?
That's the classic.
That's the classic career ender, right? You know?
That guy was so hip, man. I remember everyone loved him in high school, and then like overnight it was like, he's dead to me.
Yeah. Like there was, you know, for people that haven't seen him, Billy Squier, The Stroke, and Everybody Wants Some. He was just cool, like amazing guitar riffs and funky. Worked. And then he did Rock You Tonight, where he had like all white, kind of an 80s
and
baggy
like
pants.
Flash dance sweatshirt.
And he was doing the flash dance. They were throwing paint on him. And that's the nightmare, right? You never want to have to deal with that.
And some guy's going, no, Billy, it'll look cool. It'll look cool. Okay.
I'm telling you, Billy, this will be a big one for you. It's a game changer.
I always tell bands, especially photo shoots, because I won't do anything. Mm-hmm. And I'm always like, why do you, just because the guy's holding the camera doesn't mean you have to do what he says. Because they're always wanting you to do something stupid.
Right. And is that what you mean? I won't do anything. You want it? Yeah, you're going to do what you're going to do.
I always say, well, this is what I'm going to do, and that's it. You only need one picture.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
Why do I have to do 500 stupid things?
Well, it's funny too when you do a photo shoot. It's like I always look at a couple of the first five or six, yeah. And if you get one, like especially with a band, if every guy in the band looks cool,
yeah,
we got it.
Yeah,
we're done. Because the more you try and look cool, the less you look cool.
Yeah, and everybody gets uptight. Well, the funny thing is now, we don't even do photo shoots anymore. What we do, we've done for the last several records and for all of our photos is we just pass the camera back and forth between each other. And they take the pictures. And if there's the four of us together, we just, like when the tour manager comes, we're like, hey, Sully, take our picture. Yeah. And that'll literally
And those are usually the ones that work.
Yeah, we have not done a real photo shoot in probably 7 years.
All your photos are exactly the way you want them.
Yeah, it's funny.
Did you do like film production or any directing or any filming like when you were, you know, in college, for example?
No, before? I mean, I went to college for fine arts and I quit after 2 years while I technically got kicked out. Mm-hmm. But because I stopped, you know, because I lived in Haverhill, Massachusetts, which is so boring. Mm-hmm. Moved to Manhattan. So I just wanted to go crazy.
Right.
So going to school was like, yeah, right. So, you know, just went out every night and hit every club and did everything and saw every band. So my grades just sunk so low that they kicked me out. You couldn't fall past a certain point, which I fell way past. But no, I didn't have any experience with that at all. I just knew I wanted to do it. I mean, as a kid, like every kid, you had a Super 8 camera. We made our own movies and stuff, but that, I don't know, that doesn't count.
Do you remember any of those movies?
Yeah, the funniest thing, though, is I filmed a sequel to Escape from New York.
Oh.
Where I played Snake Plissken because I was the only one who had long hair. And it just that's why it was so funny years later. Well, actually, before I redid Halloween, which is funny, I had met Kurt Russell because I did a song for Escape from L.A.
Right.
And I had a picture from it. I go, look, check this out. It was just so weird, you know, whatever, 25 years. Hey, Kurt Russell, look at me dressed as you. Isn't this really stupid?
And now you feel really weird, right?
Really awkward for everyone.
Yes, for all involved. I wish I hadn't said a word.
But it was funny.
I walked out of an apartment building in New York a couple of years ago, and you know, New York's a busy city. I bumped into someone, like legitimate, like a real, like a, and I turn around. It's kind of this old-looking guy. He's got big glasses on. I'm like, I'm so sorry. He's like, oh, no problem. Hey, do you know where 22nd Street is? And I'm like, yeah, it's that way. And I'm realizing, oh my gosh, it's Kurt Russell. And beside him is Goldie Hawn.
Oh, nice.
And they're just walking. And they're like, look like, you know, a nice, kind of a good looking older couple. But I was just like, and then as you walk, oh, thanks for telling. I was like, Snake Plissken, like, what do you say, right? Like, I'm that guy now, just like you said. Like, I just got to let it go, man. Just let it go.
He's so nice, too. He's such a nice guy. I remember when my wife, Sherry, loved Goldie Hawn, and we met her at something. And she like just
exactly. Well, it's amazing when you meet your heroes. And I mean, you mentioned earlier, you know, touring with Alice. I know you guys have a really close relationship.
That was the best.
That's pretty cool, right? Like after you know.
Oh yeah, that was surreal because you know, I love touring, but most of the time, you know, this is not a slag on anybody. You tour with bands that maybe you're not a fan of, and even if you are, it's not really your thing. And but touring
it's more for
with,
business reasons.
Well, yeah, I mean, just because you got to tour with somebody.
That's right.
But touring with Alice was like, that was the only time the Ramones too. When we toured with the Ramones.
Oh, you toured with the Ramones.
Well, the Ramones opened for White Zombie on one of their last tours. So
oh, that's
that was
cool.
Pretty fun. That was like 95 maybe. That was exciting because I'd watch that every night. But like with Alice.
And that's totally your call.
Yeah, no.
You brought them on.
No, we overpaid to have them on the tour back then.
Just for the sense you can say we toured with the Ramones.
Because I remember our management going, you're paying them too much money. They're not worth it. And we go, I don't care.
Yeah.
We have the Ramones on stage every night.
how were they as guys? You know, I mean, obviously Joey and Johnny
were
both gone. They
were great. I mean, I was closest to Johnny. You know, me and Johnny hit it off really right away. I mean, they're all super cool. And Joey was very, very nice. But I sort of hit it off with Johnny. And we stayed friends right till he died, you know, for whatever, 10 years.
Man, that's pretty, yeah.
Because he moved to L.A. and then we hung out all the time.
Okay.
Because right. I actually convinced him to move to L.A. because he was a hardcore New Yorker.
You know? All those guys, right? Yeah. You can't even understand them hardly
and
with the accents.
And then he moved to L.A. and he was just like, Mr. L.A. I'll tell you what.
You're talking about Alice, though?
Yeah, but the Alice thing was just like, because like, this is this guy you always loved. And touring with him, though, but it seemed like this is what it would be like to tour in the 70s. This was the touring I imagined as a kid, you know? And that was just so cool.
Well, I mean, we keep talking about the 70s, and I was born, you know, in 1970 as well. So I love watching your movies because I get it. I understand what you're going for. I mean, the tone of the movies, the way, even the way you film them,
I just want everything to seem like it's still the 70s.
Even like the grainy, the grainy like film sometimes.
Oh, yeah. And I always sit in post-production. I'm like, no, we have to make it look worse.
Yeah.
It looks too good.
And I'm sure the studios were like, what?
Oh, yeah. Nobody likes that idea. Same thing with the home video. I'm like, it looks too good.
That's too clear.
We literally filmed some of the home video with someone's iPad because the cameras now are so good and the lenses are so good that it's so...
It's all HD, yeah.
That
you're
it
there.
Looks like a, it looks like a soap opera.
Right.
Me. So I'm like, we have to degenerate it enough so it looks like Song Remains the Same.
You know? Or I remember when Cliff Amahl came out, the first Metallica home video, it was all fan footage.
To me, that's cooler than you know, the new super expensive 3D movie.
With all the edits and everything.
Yeah, I like Cliff Amahl.
This is Talk is Jericho.
Rob Zombie, new live DVD release, The Zombie Horror Picture Show. New book out as well. Companion piece. You know, we're going to talk all things zombie musically and, of course, movie wise. He's a director, made some great horror movies. He loves horror movies.
I watched when I heard we were going to be doing this, it just so happened out of pure coincidence that Devil's Rejects was on and I hadn't seen it in a while. And for some reason, I was thinking, because I, you know, I loved both of those movies, but they're both very depressing. It's like if you're talking in wrestling terms, bad guy gets the heat on the good guy. Bad guy beats good guy. Bad guy kills bad guy. Bad guy goes away and lives.
And then bad guy.
Yeah. But I mean, I remember thinking, okay, well, you know, Devil's Rejects, I think wasn't as bad. But dude, I mean, there is some twisted stuff in there in a great way. Like some images, I still can never get it out of my head that you know, the dude cuts the guy's face off and then puts it on his own wife's face. I mean, that is like one of the sickest things.
That happens every day.
Yeah, Chris, it's crazy, right?
Get used to it.
So tell us about House of a Thousand Corpses. I mean, this is when you're in the height of Rob Zombie. You just went solo, you know.
Yeah, let's see.
Dragula is huge.
How did that all go down? I start getting vague. You know, that was just a weird... Oh, I remember how it went down. What happened was... I'd done Hellbilly. That was all happening. And I had done... a Halloween event at Universal Studios around 1998.
You did like a haunted house?
Yeah, and it was based on my album. It's called like the, I forget what it was called, but it was like You Walk Through My Head and each room was one of the songs. It was on the Universal lot. And then the next year they asked me to come back and do one. And I just thought of his title. I go, oh, I get this idea. We're going to call it House of a Thousand Corpses. And that was just going to be the Halloween
event. Just a haunted house.
And then through that, I started meeting people within the studio system. And one day, his name was Kevin Mischer. He was like the, I think he was the head of production. He was like, hey, do you have any ideas for movies? And I didn't at all, but I had that title. So I quickly made something up, sort of half-assed on the spot with that title. He's like, interesting. And then I kind of made up a movie around it later, and it all, it was...
Well, I mean, but you just, I mean, it was funny because around that time frame, early 2000s, I mean, that's kind of when Hostel came out. You know, Eli Roth, good friend of both of ours, I assume. He was kind of like the whole kind of splatter porn. You guys, your movies are right in there. There's a bunch of, it's kind of a real, not just a pushing of the envelope, but this kind of real twisted, uncomfortable style of film.
Yeah, because Corpses was made way before those films, like a couple of years before, but it sat on in the vault for so long because Universal didn't want to release it. And then Lionsgate put it out. And it did really well for them. And then they put out Eli's first film, Cabin Fever.
Right.
And then that did well. And I remember Eli, when I first met Eli, I was like, oh, man, thanks for that. Because if your film hadn't done good, they weren't going to get behind Cabin Fever. But then they did. And we kind of ran a similar path for a minute. And then I did Rejects. And then I think he did Hostel after that. So we were sort of like one. And we were always working with Lionsgate at the time.
They called you guys the Splat Pack.
Yeah. Because at first it was nothing like that. Because when I did Corpses... Horror, there was like no horror in theaters.
It's no, the horror that was going on there was like Scream, where they're making fun of horror at that point.
And that sort of put the nail in the coffin because, oh, we've now made fun. Scream was to me the equivalent of like, you know, Abbott and Costello meets Frankenstein. It's like, we have nowhere else to go with this, so let's just make
fun of it. Make it a comedy, yeah.
Yeah, and then it was dead. And I remember Universal was doing movies like that, Viva La Flintstones and stuff. Mm-hmm. That's the type of, they didn't want to do horror. They said it flat out. They saw, my film was so low budget, it sort of got made under the radar. so that when it was done and they saw it, they're like, we're not putting this out. Who are we kidding?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But, you know, then it was all good. And, you know, then came, I remember when I was editing Rejects, they had just finished up Saw, the first Saw.
Mm-hmm.
And by that point, it was all blown wide open, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Then it was kind of, there was no rules after that. You always kind of paid homage, though, to you know, the movies of the 70s. Great cameos in all your movies.
Well, yeah, I always loved all those actors, and I always wanted to work with them. Unfortunately, it took so long that either they're 70 years old or they're no longer with us.
But you saw some good ones, though. Like, I mean, like Leslie Easterbrook. I remember, like, wow, like, that's Police Academy chick. That's the hot Police Academy chick.
Or, I mean, some of the people, like Jeffrey Lewis was someone I always wanted to work with. From all the Clint Eastwood movies I love, especially like Thunderbolt and Lightfoot. I think that was like one of the first movies I ever saw at the drive-in.
Yeah, that guy's
great. And, you know, all those people. You
Deborah Van Valkenburg from the Warriors.
From the Warriors. She was great. And it would be like, what would happen was some of the people I would search out because I was like, I got to get this guy. But then sometimes there'd be a role and I'd be like, oh, and I don't know who to get. And then people would just come in and read because a lot of those people hadn't worked in a long time.
Right.
Like, yes. You know,
it's almost the Tarantino vibe where they're getting guys and putting them back on the map because they hadn't done anything in a while.
Because after you, you know, especially for an actress, once you're like after a certain
That's
age.
That's true,
you're
just, right.
You know, you're playing the mom on the Pillsbury Dough commercials, that's right. You know, so to get like
because
actresses that
that's they, a good point
because a lot of them, especially in the new movie, like Lords of Salem, like Meg Foster and Judy Geeson and all these people, they were like
you had PJ Souls and you had
they haven't had a job in like 11 years.
E.G. Daly,
E.G. Daly was she was funny. She came in at the last second. She was hilarious.
You know, and then when you did the Halloween movies, I mean, how much of a I mean, responsibility was that one. I feel almost like J.J. Abrams doing the new Star Wars.
You know what? Maybe it was me being naive, but I didn't really think about it. Because to me, I was like, yes, in 1978, John Carpenter made this amazing movie that I love.
Yeah.
But that's 30 years ago. And to me, the sequels got so bad after a while that I'm like, what's there to do?
Right.
You know, it didn't seem like a big deal to me. I mean, after the fact, you know, there was a bunch of Halloween fans that were like, oh, what's happening? But to me, I was like, as long as we can make Michael Myers look like he's supposed to and make it cool again and make it hardcore and not make it goofy where, you know, like Busta Rhymes is kung fu fighting Michael Myers. I go, we should be good. You know?
I remember I saw that in Detroit. I was in Detroit and I went to that. I can't remember which one it was, H2O or something.
Yeah, one of the last
and when
ones.
Buster got killed, there was a black girl in the front and she went, oh, Busta!
Yeah.
And it just killed the whole, like, oh, come on. Oh, Busta! I mean, no!
That's how I see those movies.
Yeah.
So,
it becomes a joke, right? Did you ever talk to John Carpenter about it? Did you
get any tips? Well, I had known John Carpenter since Escape from L.A. Because I had met him. How did I mean? Oh, because I did a song for
the song for it, right?
He said, oh, come down to the set. I went down to the set and hung out with him one night while I was shooting. And a super nice guy and sort of always slightly stayed in touch. I would see him at things, not like in a big way. But, before the news got announced, I called him up and I was like, hey, I still remember the conversation. I go, hey, John, it's Rob. I just want to tell you before the news comes out, I'm going to do a remake of Halloween. And there's a weird silence. And he goes, yeah, so what do you want me to say? I go, well, I don't really want you to say anything. I don't care. I just thought you should know. He's like, okay, that's good. Yeah, well, good luck with that. Whatever.
Really?
Like, he didn't care.
Yeah, whatever,
him,
right?
It's like he made this movie 35 years ago or something.
For like nothing.
Yeah, I mean.
Piddly budget.
It wasn't like he was excited I was doing it or insulted I was doing it. It was like, you know.
It is what it is at this point.
Yeah, it's like talking about his high school yearbook. He didn't give it. But I thought out of respect I should tell him
first. That's cool, man. Absolutely. It's cool. So, I mean, we're talking about the 70s. What are some of your favorite like horror movies? Are they all 70s based?
Well, no. I mean, really, a lot of them are 30s based. I mean, there's certain periods. Like, I really love the stuff from the 30s, the classic stuff, like all the Universal, you know.
Frankenstein, Wolfman,
Mummy stuff. Then I really like a lot of the Hammer stuff when Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing sort of redid all those movies. I really like those films. And then I like in the 70s when things kind of took that nasty turn with Wes Craven and Tobe Hooper making, you know, one of Chainsaw.
Sean Cunningham, yeah.
Yeah. And then I hated the 80s. I hated everything about the 80s.
All this, like the slasher films?
Everything. I hate the horror movies. I hate the fashion. I hate the hair. I hate the music. The 80s should have never happened for me.
Yeah.
So that's why I think my life stopped. I somewhere around 1978, I stopped caring about what was going on in the world. Truly.
Click back in 98 when you were able to bring it back.
Exactly. I just didn't care.
You talk about some of the movies from the 70s and Halloween, obviously you mentioned, but I always loved when they, Dawn of the Dead was one of my tops.
Yeah, I love that movie.
And when they remade it, I was really against it. Like, you know, with Halloween, I was like, okay, this is Rob's movie. I was a fan of your movie. So
well, by the
like,
time
cool.
I remade it, I thought, well, people are used to it. But I was the same way when they first announced Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah.
Like, it seems weird. But,
you know, and in retrospect, I thought they did a pretty good job of it.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Zack Snyder did a really good job, and I enjoyed it when I saw it. But at the same time, it's one of those things you can never – I get it now, more so by having gone down that road. It's like you can't – it's like, well, wait, I'm going to get you a new mom, and you're going to like new mom better than old mom.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you love – I mean, I saw Dawn of the Dead 1,000 times, and I loved it to death. And, you know, even if the – no matter how good the new one was, I still was going to love the old one more because it couldn't – the old one's so tied into your life.
Yeah, you grew up with
you
it.
Can't...
It's like a band. You like a good record. Like Van Halen 1 will always be the best Van Halen record,
no matter
what,
for
you.
It doesn't matter if they re-record it or something. Yeah. It's not going to be the same moment in time when you first heard it.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that. I had Tom Savino on my show a couple months ago, and just not only the fact that you grew up with it, but it's natural. There's no CGI back then. There was no budget. They were given, like, here's some tubes of green makeup and make these 20 people look like they're dead. You know, all the different stuff that they had to do to make it work.
Yeah.
It was pioneering stuff.
I think I don't like CGI. I mean, I know there's a purpose for it. Like, that if it's like any tool. If used the right way, it's great.
Right.
But what I like about those films is there's something about CGI for me, and I think audiences do that, like, too much of it, and you just check out.
Yeah.
Because you know, like, nothing I'm looking at is real. It doesn't exist. I've got a bunch of actors who are looking awkward because I know they spent 6 months on the green screen. But something about those movies where, like, there was really... Well, Dawn of the Dead's not a great example, but since we're talking about, like, there was those actors in that mall all night shooting that.
That's right.
And that's what, like, you know, like, I like when I make a movie, if everyone looks freezing cold and you can see their breath, it's because they're freezing cold and you can see their breath. It's not like we shot it in a stage and we CGI'd breath coming out, which I know people do different things, but I just like the realness.
It's almost
I feel
like
you can feel it. Like, you can feel in Rejects that everyone is sunburnt, hot, and miserable. Because we were.
Like, did you film, like, the majority of it takes place in that hotel room. Did you have to... like lengthen it, or was it actually the hotel room the whole time?
No, what we did was the exterior of the hotel was in Palmdale, this sort of abandoned hotel, and then we rebuilt the interior of the room inside a barn out at this ranch. So,
okay,
yeah,
you could just feel the claustrophobicness of that,
and that,
you know?
Really worked too, because, you know, it was a 4-wall set, so when you're in there, it was just the actors and the cameras, and everyone started getting weirded out because, you know, after 8 hours, even though you know it's fake, it sort of is happening right in front of you all day long. I remember Brian Posehn started getting weirded out.
Really? Yeah.
Because he was dead at that point. He's just laying. He's like, oh, Rob.
But he had to lie there for the whole,
listen to it all day. And I know that was starting to bug him.
Is there any type of movies that you wanted to make that aren't kind of in the horror genre?
Yeah. I mean, I was working on this Philadelphia Flyers movie for
a long time.
Oh,
no way.
Called Broad Street Bullies, but that's on hold because... that got real sticky with just dealing with the, you know, when you make up your own stuff.
Right.
You can, there's no problems. But with the NHL, it was like, you got to clear the licenses of every team, every player.
So was it a factual?
Yeah, it was a true story of the team, which is, you know, essentially like a crazier slap shot. Once again, the truth is crazier than
fiction.
But I have another project that, the next project is more in the horror vein, but then the project after that that's finally locked in is... couldn't be further from horror than, you know.
Which is kind of what you were saying earlier, with you had your stage show, it got so crazy, how much can you top it?
Yeah.
I could see you doing like a romantic comedy or something like that,
just,
you know?
Because I like all types of movies when they're good. You know, everybody does. I mean, a lot of times people like try to act like they're all hardcore and they only watch this or that, but I know that's all bullshit.
Especially as an artist.
Yeah.
You know? I know from this, you know, I mean, when I was a kid, I wanted to be in a rock band and I wanted to be a wrestler. Those are my two dreams. And it's like... people will like look at me like I'm insane. I was just like, I don't care. I'm going to do it. But people always, not always, not so much now, but at the first, it's like, well, you can't be in a band. You can't possibly sing. You're a wrestler. And it's like, did you ever get that? Where it's like, you can't direct a movie. You're a rock guy.
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, well, first of all, your friends are the first ones to stop you.
Yeah.
Because they're like, God forbid Jericho would make it happen. I'm going to feel so bad about myself.
Yeah, that's right. You know?
So they're the first ones to get in your way. But yeah, no, because... it's a miracle that you have any success in one field,
mm-hmm.
and then to try to move it into another field, everybody's like, "Oh man, give me a break!"
Yeah.
Now, who does this guy think he is? But I think as long as you're, you know, and as you know, you don't do it for the success part,
right?
If that comes, great. Mm-hmm. You do it for the art of it, that you love it.
Yes.
Because it doesn't matter to me. Like, you know, Halloween was a big success. It came in at number one and was made a fortune. But there was things about the movie I wasn't happy with. So mm-hmm. that always bothered me.
Was that your highest grossing movie?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
And even though it was number one, I was still like, man, I wish I had...
Could have been better.
And then other movies that haven't done as well, but I knew I got it right, I'm like happy. Like, it's only about the thing. I don't mm-hmm. care about the other
It's
stuff.
About the accomplishment and pushing yourself as an artist.
Yeah, that's all that matters.
You know, you're right.
And that's why sometimes I feel like people forget that, and that's why they don't... They're not worried. They're not trying to be different. They're trying to be the same because they think that's the quickest path to success. Mm-hmm.
People want to put themselves into a box and say, you know, if you're this, you can only do this. But yeah. Now it is more about not your brand in a cheesy way, but it's your brand, the Rob Zombie brand.
Well,
you know?
Yeah. I mean, now it's almost like if you just say you're
yeah.
If you go to a record label, like, what do you do? Oh, I'm
a singer.
Like, yeah, come back to us when you wrestle too. You know, because they don't want just that anymore. They want the whole. Yeah. We need more than that, buddy.
So, well, and you've done some stuff with WWE and Raw. Were you a wrestling fan, or are you a wrestling fan?
I don't watch it now really so much, but when I was a kid, I would always go. My parents would always take me to Boston Garden, but that
Classic.
Was always like, well, it was like, you know, Bruno Sammartino,
yeah.
Haystacks Calhoun and Chief J Strongbow, and
right.
I got to see Georgie Animal Steel a bunch of times, and Emil Mascaris. I was very excited to have seen Emil Mascaris.
Interesting.
Wrestle. And I was in the second row, and he jumped off. You remember wrestling seemed a lot nastier in the 70s.
Yeah, with less rules.
And he was beating a guy in the head with a chair, right? And I was probably in second grade, and I'm like, Mom, don't you think this is inappropriate for me? I guess not. He's bleeding everywhere, but we'll keep watching. You know? And it's
I remember we went once, probably about the same time frame, maybe 81, 82, and they were chanting at a girl, one of the valets, the whole crowd, show your tits, show your tits. And my dad was sitting, I'm like, oh, my dad's going to be so mad. And I turn around, he's just kind of smiling. He's like, this is wrestling, son.
It's like, that's why we're here.
You can actually say that here? I love this.
Oh, man.
So you always had appreciation for it, because I know there's been a few times when you've come and done Raw.
Well, yeah. No, I always have, because I love the entertainment of it all. Like, I did Raw maybe a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I got to hang out longer and see them.
The behind the scenes.
Yeah,
and
see Vince come in and change the whole program and watch all the wrestlers freak out at the last minute. Like, we've been rehearsing this all day and now this is happening.
That's exactly right.
Well, I've known a bunch of wrestlers over the years. You know, Diamond Dallas Page was a good friend for a long time.
He was in Rejects?
Yeah, he was in Rejects. And at that point was when he had just started, you know, his yoga thing?
Yeah.
He had just started it, and he would come over to my house every single day and make me do yoga. And at first, I was like, this is so lame. But then after a while, it really does work.
Dude, I was messed up a couple years ago, and
really
Paige
good.
Called me, and I was like you said, yoga's for like hippies and East Indian gurus.
He's like, I'm going to teach you how to breathe. You're going to teach me how, okay, dude.
Yeah.
Whatever.
And then, lo and behold, I did it, and it cured, you know, it cured what ailed me, you know?
No, it's great. I saw he was on Shark Tank.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he should have got it. Actually, you know what's funny? It just reminded me. I actually auditioned for Devil's Rejects.
You did?
For the part that Paige got, and the casting director was like, you're just too pretty. And I was like, well, I guess that's a compliment. Why can't I be uglier?
That probably is what they said, because I was always saying that, like, before I got Danny Trejo for the other part, they kept sending me people. I go, man, this guy next to DDP, I need another mug next to him, you know?
Was DDP Rondo or was Danny Rondo?
Danny was Rondo.
That's the one. That's
DDP like, was always in.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I always knew he was going to do it. Like, Rob, you got to hook me up. Come on, bro.
The
come
master
on, bro.
Promoter, right? Yeah. Come on, bro. Bro, come on. I'll send you free yoga.
Like right down the street from him. He was cool. And
yeah. I remember it was Rondo was the one that I auditioned for.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
And I didn't know Danny at that point, but he was cool. He was funny.
Do you like the Machete movies?
I love Danny in those movies.
Yeah,
I think,
yeah.
You know, the movies are cool. I like the first one better than the second one, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes the actors get – I think they get campy because they're cameoing.
Mm-hmm.
But I love watching Danny. He's so –
He plays it so straight.
So straight. And
yeah.
That's why I love it.
Like when he's reading the script and it says Machete, don't text. It's like
probably
not the best line, but the way he delivers
Stupidest
it is so –
Stupidest line in the world. Only he could deliver. But it's like – you know, Danny's funny. One day he was talking to me. He's like, you know, I wish I could do a good Danny impression.
Yeah.
You know, he goes, Rob, I'm going to bring my A game for this movie. Sometimes I show up, I got to admit. I bring my B game, sometimes my C game. Like he's got compares the level
different
of
levels.
Pay
yeah.
to the level of game he's bringing to your production. I go, oh, that's just too funny.
Who are your favorite directors?
I mean, I really, you know, it sounds so ridiculous and snooty, but I really like watching foreign films because I feel like now, like, American films are so formulaic. Like, that's the point of them.
Major studio
that
movies.
I feel like I can't learn anything from them. Like,
right.
I'm like, you know, you watch the trailer, here's all the beats, you know how it's going to lay out, you know how the movie's going to end or go just by whose cast. So, I mean, I really like going back. I like, you know, I really love things like Ingmar Bergman.
Classic
sounds
ones, right?
So, like, snooty and stupid to say it. But that's the type of stuff I always like to watch.
Did you ever get into J-horror at all? The Japanese horror movies?
Like, back in the day, but not so much now. I mean, it's really weird. I rarely watch horror movies because it seems like I've seen everything.
Yeah,
and if
yeah.
I'm not, and if I haven't seen it, it's usually something that's so shit that there's a reason why I didn't see it. So I'm just always, anything where I like watching something where at the end of it, I go, that director's brilliant.
Just the shots, you know,
just
and everything,
like, just
right?
Everything yeah. about it, we go, that guy. Like, you know.
A modern movie?
Nah, I forget. I won Best Academy Award for, like, a foreign film last.
Oh, okay.
I can't remember. Who cares?
One of those ones.
But I watched, shit, I can't blank it. But you're just watching, you'll go, God damn.
You just can learn from that, yeah. Zombie Horror Picture Show is the DVD, May 19th.
Well, the exact opposite of what I was just talking about.
Yeah. Just, yeah, the shameless Gene Simmons. Let's turn it back to why we're here. And you got a book coming out with it, too. Is that kind of a companion piece?
It kind of is and it kind of isn't. I mean, I gave it the same title, but... this photographer, Rob Fenn, was on the road with us for the whole tour. Oh, you probably
great
Rob,
photographer, yeah.
And he was backstage and on stage and everywhere and put together this really cool book.
Have you ever thought about writing a book, an autobiography?
No.
Not your
I
thing?
I don't really want to tell anyone anything. If I actually told the truth about how I feel about everything, I would have no friends. Everybody would hate me. I'll keep it to myself.
you guys, you going to do some new music soon? Or
we started a record a couple months ago, and when this tour ends in about a week, we're going to go back to the studio and keep working.
It's great. You got a great band, man. John's
oh, this guy's a phenomenal.
Great player and a sweetheart of a guy, too.
John's the best.
Did Ozzy ever try and steal him?
Yes.
Really?
Everyone does. John tells me when he goes, I just got a call from fill in the blank, which is pretty much every band you can think of.
Yeah.
He goes, I told him no.
Thankfully.
So that literally would have been my entire band.
Yeah. Ozzy had your rhythm section.
Yeah.
He's in Sabbath now.
John's the only one that stuck
out. Yeah. Well, Rob, thanks, man. I appreciate you doing this, and I know you got
to
sing that, as do I. So
good to
keep
see
rocking,
you.
Dude. Thanks, man.
Handshake. No camera, but it happened.
It did. The handshake. And we're both wearing no pants.
Well, you do have underwear on.
All right, thanks to Rob Zombie for a great interview. Always fun to see him. Very cool guy. And like you said, he loves the 70s. So do I. I also love being out on the rock and roll road with all of you, rocking and rolling. Tour's almost done. The Lights Go Out tour is wrapping up. We still have May 23rd in the Atlanta Prefecture, Duluth, Georgia, at Wild Bill's with Buck Cherry. We've got May 25th, Beckley, West Virginia at Munchies. That's just a Fozzy gig. May 26th, Connell Lake, PA, Beach Club with Buck Cherry. May 27th, Oneonta, New York, upstate New York, Oneonta Theater with Buck Cherry. May 28th, the listening party in New York City at Idle Hands to hear the new Fozzy record in its entirety, 2 months before anybody else gets the chance to hear it. You do not want to miss that if you're a New York City area Fozzy fan. May 30th, Huntington, New York, Long Island area at the Paramount. May 31st, Philadelphia, PA, Xfinity Live. June 14th, main stage at Download. It's our third time playing Download and the biggest show we've ever done there. Main stage. That's for the big boys. Linkin Park and Fall Out Boy will be there with us that day. Killswitch Engage as well. Then, of course, June 12th and 15th is London is Jericho. You got to get a ticket for this show. I promise you're going to love it. It's a spoken word, question and answer session, tap dancing. I'll be doing some live baking on stage. All of these great things at Leicester Square, June 12th and June 15th. Go Google that. London is Jericho to get tickets. There's a few tickets left. The first show is getting, actually both shows are getting close to sold out, but there's still tickets left. So if you want to come be a part of this, it's a really cool, unique experience. You are going to love it. I promise. You're also going to love calling in to talk to me. I posted the number earlier on the Twitter at Talk is Jericho. All right, let's head over to East Tennessee and talk to Corbin. What's going on, man?
Hey, Chris, I got a question. Why is JTG and Code Hawkins still on the roster, but they don't get pushed?
First of all, where in Eastern Tennessee are you from?
Morgan County.
Okay, cool. I used to live in Morristown, man.
Did you?
Yeah, Morristown. It was a dry county, which was kind of lame, but I lived there when I was working for Smoky Mountain Wrestling back, geez, 20 years ago now. So, beautiful part of the country. And I don't know why they keep certain guys on the roster.
that don't really work. I don't know if they maybe think that somehow the guys will find something new, or I've often wondered that myself, because you see guys that show up every week on TV and they're just there. They don't ever work. Maybe do a dark match once in a while. Maybe do a live event once in a while. But I can't answer that question. It would seem to me either, you know, poop or get off the pot. If you're going to do something with the guy, do it. And if not, then let them go and see if they can go find something else somewhere else. But it's kind of the eternal question. I'm not sure.
It's not like they ain't got no talent. Coke can do a lot.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, I had a couple really good matches with JTG as well, especially when he was doing the Crime Time thing. I mean, you know, it's one of those things. Put them together as a tag team and see how it works. I mean, there's tons of guys like that. If you're looking at, you know, Tyson Kidd or Justin Gabriel or, you know, any guys, there's plenty of them that you just think, Alex Riley, like, what are you doing with these guys? Either use them or don't. So I'm sure the guys might feel differently. Maybe they like just being on the roster and making money, but it's not like you're making much money. You know, if you're not on the road and not working, it's not like you're, you know, coming out getting rich off it. You're probably owing them money more than anything. So I agree with you. I don't know why they do it, but I would at least give them a shot and see how they go, you know, with one last chance. And if not, then move on to the next phase of your life. All right, let's go across the pond for a rare call from England. Kim from the Midlands. Hello, Kim. Cheerio.
Wow.
Cheerio.
Jericho, hello.
How are you?
Dude, I'm freaking out in my living room. I'm talking to Los Angeles.
I know. I'm so excited. It's good to hear the worldwide appeal of Talk is Jericho. Whereabouts are you?
I can't tell you. We're in Stoke-on-Trent in the Midlands.
Oh, wow. I love it.
Yeah, we I totally nearly bit your hand off at the Underground in Stoke-on-Trent last year.
Why was my hand in your mouth?
Oh, I was pure rocking out to a crazy fuzzy set. It was incredible.
Oh, that's...
Oh, my God, this is going to be really stalkerish, but I'm pure looking at the set list you gave me right now.
Oh, and where was that show at?
It was at the Underground in Stoke-on-Trent.
Oh, okay. Who did we play with? Was that with Ugly Kid Joe?
Oh, it was with...
Soil?
Soil. I'm sure it was Soil.
That's right.
To be honest, yeah, I'm being nodded at. It was definitely Soil.
All right, that's who it was. Ah, I remember. Oh, cool. So what's your question today?
So I'm totally coming to Download Festival. It's going to be awesome. Linkin Park, Fall Out Boy, and Fozzy, of course.
Yeah.
How excited about it are you?
I mean, we're really excited. I mean, we were there in 2012, and we played. I mean, I think there's six stages, and we played on the second stage, and we were really early on in the day. And I remember the band before us had, like, I don't know, 500 people there, and I was thinking, oh, well, it's going to be a small show. And then I'm not even kidding. When I came out on stage, it was like they had added a CGI crowd. There was like 25,000 people there, and that's for real. The picture is like there's far as the eye could see was fans, and people were going nuts, and it was such a cool show, and it was early on in the day. So now, fast forward to 2014, I guess we impressed Download so much that now we're playing early in the day but on the main stage. So we moved up a whole stage. Like, I was thinking maybe we'll be higher up on the second stage, but now we're, like, playing with the big boys on the main stage. We're really, really excited. I mean, obviously, it doesn't get much bigger than Download, especially doing it on the main stage.
It's going to be amazing.
You know, yeah. So I know I think Avenged is on Friday, Aerosmith is on Sunday, and our day is Linkin Park at the headline of the main stage, right?
Yeah, totally. Will you stick around and watch any of the bands that are about?
I'll watch all the. I won't go a day before or a day after. I have spoken word like shows in London on the 12th and the 15th. But on the 14th, I'll be watching around. There's so many cool bands on that day. I mean, who else are you excited to see?
Definitely Fall Out Boy. Definitely Aerosmith. That's like a once in a lifetime opportunity.
Yeah.
Avenged Sevenfold. Who else? Steel Panther as well. That's going to be incredible.
Yeah.
Just so many that whole weekend is.
Are you going? So you're going for the whole weekend?
Yeah, of course. Rock it up, no grown ups, all weekend. Why not?
And what do you do? Do you bring a tent and stay all weekend in the tent?
Yeah, we'll get there in the tent. Bring the barbecue out.
Oh, that's
nice
awesome!
Nice little steak and egg breakfast. It'll be good.
Come so much fun, right?
Set you up with some breakfast.
Now, were you there in 2012?
Not in 2012. Because no, I had to be a boring grown-up and work. But the rain
was awful, and it was like a mud fest. So hopefully the lovely English weather will hold out, and you guys will get some sun and have a good time. So, but yeah, Kim, well, good. I'm so glad that you called, and look forward to rocking with you at Download. It's going to be awesome. It's June 14th.
Oh, it'll be amazing.
Thank you so much.
My duetting skills for She's My Addiction. I'll be on that stage, man. It'll be incredible.
All right. Sing it loud. We'll make sure we'll play that just for you.
Amazing.
Thank you
so much for taking my call.
Talk to you soon. Thank you.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for your calls. Thanks to Rob Zombie. Thanks to all of you. And thanks for using my Amazon link every time you do your online shopping. It's really easy to find. Just go to podcastone.com, click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page, then click on Talk is Jericho, and you see all three of my Amazon links in the UK, Canada, and everybody's going Amazon USA. Every time you do that, click on it. Amazon will kick back a little cash to the show so we can keep doing this for you for free for twice a week. No extra fees, no hidden charges. You're just getting your shopping done and you're helping me out in the process. Go check out the new Rob Zombie live DVD, The Zombie Horror Picture Show. You can buy it right there on Amazon. Do it. He's got a book out as well. So many cool things. Thank you for being here. I know there's hundreds of thousands of podcasts for you to listen to. And the fact that you choose to spend a couple times a week with me, it warms my heart. It warms my cockles. Believe me. You don't want to see me with warm cockles. It could get dangerous and sticky. I'm Chris Jericho. Stay hard, stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs. We'll see you next week in the fine Gibweep.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.